It's 12:06. Welcome back to Open Air on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio, also streaming online at ijpr.org. My guest live in the JPR studios is Colin Hay. Colin, welcome back to Jefferson Public Radio. Colin, I want to talk about your early work briefly, because you have done so much over the last 15 years as well, but you are known really the world over as the lead man of the Aussie band Men at Work, but you're actually Scottish, right?
Correct. Well, I'm Australian as well.
How long were you in Scotland?
Most people that went to Australia. Most people are either, I think something like between 50 and 60% of Australians now are first generation Australians.
What brought your family to Australia?
For a better life. I had bronchial asthma. My father thought we'd go to the other side of the world. He was sick of the rain. It was a very big thing to do, but there was a lot of people who went to Australia under that scheme. It was called an assisted passage. It wasn't a politically correct government policy, you know, but that's how a lot of people got there, you know, because they brought people from Europe primarily, and to increase the workforce in Australia, because they needed more workers.
And what did your parents do? I read that they had a music store.
Yeah, they had a music store in Scotland, and my father was a piano tuner. And when we went to Australia, they didn't have a music store, but he continued to tune pianos. And my mother worked in theatres and record stores and stuff like that. But always kind of in the area of music.
And you were what, mid-teens when you moved to Australia?
14.
What transpires between
I left Janet Roos. Janet, I wonder where she is now. I did get to kiss her, though.
Yeah?
It was fantastic.
Nice.
I wonder what happened to Janet.
Maybe she's listening now.
Huh? I hope so.
So what transpires between roughly 15 years old and the time that you start playing music professionally? Were you a music student? Were you playing as a hobby?
No, I was never. I would never consider it to have been. Well, it's more a hobby now, really, I suppose. I've never had hobbies. I've never really understood people that do have hobbies. I suppose I do understand that, but people potter around with things. No, I just always wanted to be in a rock and roll band, you know. That's all I really wanted to do. From when I could remember, from as soon as I could play the guitar, I thought, oh, you know, I want to be, you know, I asked my father if I could be in the Beatles, and he said, no, I can't be in the Beatles, because all those slots are filled.
Which one did you want to be?
I didn't want to be any one of them. No. I just wanted to join them, you know, and be, you know, John, Paul, George, Ringo, and Colin, but it wasn't going to happen.
So how did the formulation of Men at Work come together? Were these guys that you knew?
Just a huge mistake in the end, is what it was.
It worked out well for a few years.
No, I'm just kidding. No, it was great. I was at, how did it form? Well,
yeah. Did you know all of these guys?
No, I knew Greg. I met Greg when I was at school. Greg was my friend, and then I met Ron Stryker in, I think it was 1977, and that was a good moment because he was a beautiful 12-string guitar player, and he opened a door, like a creative door for me, because I thought, well, I thought we could write good things together and play well together. So, and that's in fact what happened. And Jerry, I met the drummer at university, at La Trobe University. I went to university. Actually, the reason how it all came together was because of a friend of mine who's still my closest friend in Melbourne, a guy called Kim Gingell, who's a famous actor there. He was the conduit. He was the facilitator of Men at Work, because he introduced me to Greg. He also introduced me to Jerry. So that the band would never have happened if it hadn't been for Kim. He's a famous actor down in Australia. But anyway, so and then I met the manager at university. University was great because I got to do a degree in you know, wallowing around, really, not doing particularly anything, getting an arts degree. But it was a good place to plot and scheme and figure out how to take over the world, you know. Mm. And that's what was good for me. University was great for writing songs, and it was a great place to go. I recommend it to anybody.
Here in the States, these first couple of albums, Business as Usual and Cargo, they seemed almost immediate hits, but I'm guessing that there was probably a little bit longer gestation going on before we were attuned to the music that you guys had recorded.
Yeah, well, America's like the classic, the biggest, you know, it's the biggest machine, but it's a bit slow, you know, and laborious at that time. Bit like the Sleeping Giant, you know, but they rejected the album a couple of times because they said there's no hits on it.
Really?
Eventually it got released, and then it was like a big machine, and it started to happen. And but yeah, they were big records, you know.
They were really big records. How long did that last? The explosion.
Well, it's still going. The dust is still settling.
Yeah, and in fact, there's an interesting thing that has sort of plagued the Men at Work and the Down Under song in recent years, which is this weird litigation lawsuit thing, which we're not going to go into because it's a little tedious. But
well, it's not tedious. Well, it is tedious, but it's not actually weird. I mean, it's something that's very real. You know, it happened to me, and I was sued, and it went on for years, and it's hideously expensive, and I don't recommend it to anybody. You know, it's not actually, you know, it's really a horrible thing to have happened, and it's cost a lot in financial terms, and it costs a lot in personal terms, because, you know, I think it went a fair way to you know, at least contributing to my father's death. You know, that just the I'm not going to go out on a limb and say that it was certainly not the cause of it, but it certainly increased his stress levels to the point where he had a stroke, you know, and because he used to worry about it so much, and he knew the truth of it. And the truth of it was that, you know, when the song got written, there was no appropriation of any lines. And of course, Greg was guilt-ridden horrendously because he played the part, and although he wasn't sued personally, he felt tremendous guilt for that. And now he's gone. So it's a, you know, I'll have just terrible feelings about this whole thing for as long as I'm alive. So whilst, you know, you can skirt over it, and I have no problem skirting over it, but it has a lot of depth and tremendous hurt involved with it.
Over the years, did you stay close to all of the guys?
No.
No? Due to rifts internally that led to the band eventually breaking up?
Yeah, just guys, you know, people in bands. That's what happens to bands. I mean, Greg was my friend and always was, and I continued to see him up until he died. But I never saw any of the other guys.
Colin Hay is my guest, live in the studio here on Jefferson Public Radio. The latest album is called Gathering Mercury. Do you mind starting with something that's a little older?
What, like Auld Lang Syne?
Do you got that worked up?
I can get to sleep. Think about the implications of diving in too deep, and possibly the complications, especially at night. I worry over situations, and it will be alright. Perhaps it's just imagination. Day after day, reappears. Night after night, my heartbeat shows the fear. Ghosts appear and fade away. Alone between the sheets only brings exasperation. It's time to walk the streets, smell the desperation. At least there's pretty lights, and though there's little variation, it nullifies the night from overkill. Day after day, it reappears. Night after night, my heartbeat shows the fear. Ghosts appear and fade away. Ghosts appear and fade away. Ghosts appear and fade away.
That is Colin Hay live on Open Air here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio, online at www.ijpr.org. Colin, when we were setting up earlier today, we were talking about you playing those older songs from the Men at Work era. And we were talking about whether or not you still love to play those old songs, or whether you've kind of come and gone over the years of a love-hate relationship with those things.
Oh, I've never hated them at all.
Do you get tired of them sometimes?
Well, you get tired of any song, you know, whether it's sometimes you get sick of a song that you wrote last year. But, I mean, clearly the songs that you really want to play are the ones that you wrote yesterday, because they're the ones that are freshest. And I was saying to you before that you record them and then you're just reproducing them, you know. But now, if you're going to go out on the road and you have to make a decision. You have to decide whether you're going to just play songs that you feel like playing, or are you going to do songs that just the audience, where you play songs that you think the audience are going to want to hear, or in my case, I kind of do a combination where I play songs that I want to play that I feel particularly close to, and they're usually the most recent material. But then I play songs that I wrote when I was with Men at Work, because clearly some people come to hear them. And in a lot of ways, it gives because I tell stories between songs, it gives the show that kind of time perspective, if you like, or it gives it a dimension of how much time has gone by. So there's a frame of reference, if you like, with the songs. So, but there's a lot of songs, you know, over the years, well, not as many as a lot of people, but there's, you know, 13, 14 albums or something. So, you know, I'll probably always play Overkill because I think it's a strong song. I think it's stood the test of time. I play Down Under, I play Who Can It Be Now. Sometimes I play a couple of other songs from that time, and then I play songs from that have become somewhat well known since then. I usually play a song called Beautiful World. I play a song called Waiting for My Real Life to Begin. And I play those songs because I think they're strong songs, but they're also songs that people have picked up on, you know, over the last few years. And then I just throw in songs that I like to play that may not necessarily be known by anybody, but I just play them because I like them. And so it's a whole kind of, people don't seem to complain.
I want to ask you about some of the newer songs. You mentioned Beautiful World and Waiting for My Real Life to Begin. About a decade or so ago, I don't know if you would think of it as a second career or just an infusion of energy of your ongoing career, but there was this interesting connection with Zach Braff, both the theatrical connection with Garden State and also the television series Scrubs. And you had some really fortuitous placement with some beautiful songs. And all of a sudden, you've now got this second fan base.
Correct.
Are they familiar with Men at Work? Do they know? Does this group?
Well, they are a little bit now. Not necessarily, because they've picked up on me since Scrubs. So they're like a later audience. But they have they'll go back and they might have a listen to that. But they're not. Maybe they're not that familiar with Men at Work. You know, nor should they be really, because it wasn't really their era. But you're always going for new audiences, you know. Because if I was trying to cater for people that were fans of Men at Work, I wouldn't have a career. Because people who are my age don't go out anymore, by and large. They stay home. So, you know, you can't, unless, and also the thing is for me is that I don't go out as Men at Work. It's not like if you go out as the Eagles, or you go out as like an incredibly successful band that's always been called the Eagles, then people go, oh, you know, they're going to go and see the Eagles. So they know they're going to get a certain set of songs, and they know that there's probably going to be three or four people that they know on the stage. But my brand is different. It's like I stepped out of the Men at Work and I've been trying to kind of develop this solo thing. So, and it's been quite difficult, you know, in many ways, because it hasn't had that brand. So you're trying to connect the dots all the time, you know. And like I was in a coffee shop in Springfield, Illinois, and there were two guys serving coffee. One was about 40 and one was about 20. And the younger guy said, "Hey, man," he goes, "I love your music." I said, "Oh, thanks very much." And he said, "Overkill's my favorite song." And I said, "Oh, thanks very much." And then the older guy looked at me and he goes, "You know who that is?" And he goes, "Yeah, he's in Scrubs." And the older guy goes, "What's Scrubs?" "He was in Men at Work." And the young guy said, "What's Men at Work?" So I had them both, but they're unaware of each other.
Yeah. How did that connection happen?
He just used to come and see me play. We have a couple of mutual friends, and he came to see me play a couple of times. He had my CDs, and then he got the gig in the show, and he told me about it one night. He said, "I've got this gig in this television show, and I'm going to be the star. He said, I'll take your CDs in and see if I can get them played. And then he brought Bill Lawrence, the creator of the show, down to see me play, and he liked the show. And afterwards he said, you know, I like these new songs. He says, why are they not in the on the radio? And I said, that's a good question right there. And so he said, I'm going to use a bunch of your songs in my show and see if it makes a difference. So that's what he did. So, yeah, it's the one, it's more or less the phenomenon of that has really helped my career enormously in the last decade.
So it's a different medium, but pretty much the same process, right? The hope of getting your music into the hands of some kind ears of someone who's supportive.
Yeah, and it's what it is for me. It's an affirmation as well, because you think to yourself, you know, when you put out records and you give them to, you know, radio stations with program managers that just kind of, to my mind, just, you know, they reject them and they go, we're not going to play this, you know. And you think, well, I wonder why they're not going to play it. And they give you all kinds of reasons, which always, to me, confound me. Like, I don't really understand radio, but I've always thought to myself that they were wrong. You know, that if they played these songs, people would respond to them. So you take a song like I Just Don't Think I'll Ever Get Over You, which is 7 minutes long. And I thought to myself, that's a great song. I mean, I wouldn't give it to somebody to play as a single, but it comes out on Sony on a soundtrack, and a million people buy it, and so that's one of the strongest songs I have. So you think to yourself, well, actually, I think I'm right that I have some things to offer. But over a period of years, it does wear you down. It does kind of beat you down where you come up against all these morons and idiots, and you think to yourself, well, they're wrong, actually, and I'm right. And I think that's true. So in the end, I just don't really care about that. That's why I go out on the road, is because they know. Like your audiences know, and you just have to try and figure out how to get to them. And it's really frustrating, because it's both fulfilling and frustrating at the same time. And then somebody like Bill Lawrence, who comes along, who also gets annoyed because he hasn't heard these songs on the radio. He goes, these songs are really good. Why are they not on the radio? And he says, that annoys me that they're not. So he does something, and he's in a position of power to do something about it. He does do something about it. And all of a sudden you think, oh, people do like this.
Yeah.
You know, they are responding to it. So it gives you a new lease of energy on the tunes, you know.
Colin Hay is my guest, live in the studio here on Open Air on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Wonder if you might do one from Going Somewhere. How about Maggie?
Aha. When I first set eyes on you, first you beat me up, then you kissed me too. We throw stones to the sea, there were no others then, just you and me. Across the bridge, down the lane, I knew I loved you then, you said you did the same. Oh, Maggie, what have you done? I should have seen it coming to your side, I run. Oh, Maggie, come to me tonight. I will, if you make sure you're all right. Taught me how to sink or swim. When I was scared that day, you just pushed me in. And when nobody was around, you let me kiss you then. There the love I found. I said I'd never let you go. You just smiled at me. How was I to know? Oh, Maggie, what am I to do? How can I live with only memories of you? Oh, Maggie, tell me the truth. When your ship was sinking, did you think it through? You are
the fountain of my youth. When I fumbled, you showed me what to do. And when we were both 17, you left me standing there, but you were never mean. When I saw you out with him, he looked much older, you looked very thin. I hadn't heard from you in years. Then your mama called, she couldn't speak for tears. She said you left me a note. Inside my pocket burns with these words you wrote. Hey darling boy, don't you cry for me. I am forever yours now that I am free. We'll be together, throw stones into the sea. Well, no others there. I think you came the other night. You stroked my brow, your eyes were full of light. It may have only been a dream, but I will walk with you to places I never have. Maggie's gone.
That is Maggie Collin-Hay live in the JPR studios here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio and online at ijpr.org. Colin, Gathering Mercury is now your 11th solo album, is that right?
I think so.
Have you lost track over the years?
No, I think it's more than that. Into.
How does this one fit into your catalog overall? It seems like over the last few years you have slowly been moving the direction of a little bit bigger band sound as opposed to like going back to going somewhere.
I never really think about it between records or which direction's going where. I just record records and I try and make them good, try and make them better than the last one. But I never think about the last one, really. And it depends on who's around at the time. I just record what I think are the best songs that I've got. You try and have respect for the songs. I mean, the acoustic one I did, Going Somewhere, was because I did that because I was out on the road and a lot because not through choice, more by circumstance, because I couldn't really afford to have a band at the time to tour. And the offers that came in, I would go and play solo. So people used to say to me, oh, record a solo record. It was just with guitar. That's all we want. Mm. We want that. So I did it really in response to fans, you know, asking me for that. It wasn't really an idea that I came up with. So I did that, and then people liked it. But since then, it's been more, you know, I like recording with different musicians. But ultimately, you have to try and, you know, songs can be recorded in all different ways. And I mean, I record at home, so I traditionally haven't had a producer, not necessarily because I don't want to have a producer, but it's just that, you know, make them with no budgets, you know, I pay for them myself. So it's not like I'm going out with trying to find people to produce the records.
When you write songs, do you write them with you in mind performing them solo, or do you have a concept of the full?
I never have a concept of anything.
No,
I just record.
They just come out.
Well, you know, I mean, clearly, I'm thinking that I'm going to record them because they're my songs, and that's. But I never think, oh, here's a song that I'm going to record. I mean, some people do that. I mean, I wouldn't mind trying my hand at writing songs for other people, but so far I haven't had time. You know, I'm just really, you know, I kind of go out on the road because I can do it. A lot of my friends who were in bands, similar, maybe a, you know, similar situation to me, they sometimes you have to just, you reach a kind of a fork in the road and you think, well, how am I going to stay in the game of making a living from playing music? A lot of people stay home and they just go, well, I'm going to write songs for film and television, or I'm going to just stay in one spot. And they manage to have a successful career doing that. I didn't really choose to do that. I just went out on the road and I'm still on the road. You know, I'd like to get off the road, but more, but it seems to be working okay.
One musician that has been with you on a number of your recent albums is your wife. What does she add to the sound of your music?
Well, she's a great musician in her own right, and she's a great producer as well, and she's a very smart and very instinctive. So she's the first person and the last person in a way that I want to please, that I play something to. You know, so if I play something, she'll either say straight away whether she likes it or whether she thinks it's rubbish. You know, she doesn't say it like that, but.
I was going to ask what your batting average was with things that she liked and things that she didn't.
You know, she's sometimes that she thinks that sometimes she'll say that she didn't really hear something, you know, on first listen, but after I've finished it, she grows to like it. But she's highly skilled, you know, and has been on stage since she's 7 years old, so she knows what she's talking about.
And this is Cecilia Noel that we're talking about. She's
yes,
got an album unless, out of her own, a couple of albums on her
unless
own.
Unless you know of somebody else that I'm married to.
And she has another one coming, a new album
she
coming.
She does, yeah. It should be out soon.
You've kind of already touched on this a little bit, but it seems like most of the quote-unquote hits from Men at Work were up-tempo. Most of the songs of solo Colin Hay that have become most popular are slower. Do you have an affinity for one or the other?
Well, I'm moving a bit slower these days. I mean, I'm nearly 60. I haven't got quite the spring in my step that I had. So
the songs.
Let's just slow that down.
The songs
a wee
are
bit.
Slowing down. Gotcha.
No, I don't know. I think it's just the nature of things. But they might speed up again soon. I sense a speed in tempo. You know, coming up.
Right, for the new album.
Well, not necessarily a new album, but just I sense a. You know, an increase in tempo in the next few years.
Gotcha. We were talking about ABC. Is that what you called it? The Australian Broadcasting Corporation?
Yeah.
It's sort of like Australia's version of the BBC?
Correct.
Do they have listener contribution pledge drive things the way we do here in the States?
I think it's all tax paid. I think it's government sponsored. I don't remember them doing fund drives, so it's a bit of a luxury down there having that. And I think that people have come to really... I mean, the ABC is loved down there dearly, and it's one of the things that I think people really hold dear, you know?
Yeah.
And I really believe in public radio. I think it's really necessary for a healthy society.
And for great music.
Yeah.
Colin Hay, thank you so much for being here today. Before I let you go, I want to ask you really briefly about football, though, if I can.
What, the real football?
The real football. Yeah. Because in 2005, you recorded a tribute song for George Best. And you reference George Best in Are You Looking At Me? Are you really a George Best fan?
Oh, yeah.
Are you a Man U fan?
A huge George Best fan. Oh, not so much a Man U. I'm not a fan of any particular team, which is weird. Some people, I mean, everyone should have a team, I suppose, but I don't really have one, you know. But I love the game. I grew up in Scotland, and of course, I've supported Rangers because I was brought up a Protestant, whatever that means. But it was weird because I also liked Celtic, which is really... You can't do because
right.
they're the other side. They're the enemy,
yeah.
Supposedly.
Still are.
But Bobby Lennox, who played for Celtic and Scotland, one of the greatest players Scotland's ever seen, lived in my town, and he would kick the ball around with us sometimes. So I loved him, and so I loved Celtic as well, but I had to keep that to myself. So that was a strange thing. But yeah, George was just unbelievable. Actually, that song was originally on Transcendental Highway, so I didn't actually write it. I mean, you know, a song which I wrote because he had to spend... a Christmas in jail because he hadn't paid parking fines. But then when he died, then it was used as the bed track for some of his greatest goals. But he was terrific.
I remember the quote, Maradona good, Pele better, George best. Do we have time to go out with one more tune?
Sure. I can hear a strange calling from behind the scenes. I could not open my eyes
Gathering Mercury, that is Colin Hay, live in the studios of Jefferson Public Radio. Live music on Jefferson Public Radio, made possible by you. Colin Hay, thank you so much for being
here
today.
My pleasure. Thank you.